KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up, a bill to make California a so-called sanctuary state clears a major hurdle. Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon announces a deal with Governor Brown to address concerns of law enforcement agencies. As the bill heads to a final vote this week, we'll discuss the politics and policy behind Senate Bill 54. Then an audit of a state tax agency finds it's virtually all in the family over there, with one in five employees working with or for a relative, and several having nepotism conflicts of interest. We'll get started right after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Well, tough talk on immigration from the Trump administration has put cooperation between local law enforcement and federal immigration agencies at the top of the agenda in Sacramento. Many so-called sanctuary cities have strict limits on how much police and sheriffs can help federal agents round up the undocumented immigrants in jails and in their communities. And Senate Bill 54 would extend those restrictions to all of California, making us a so-called sanctuary state. Well, the bill has already passed the Senate, but Governor Jerry Brown said he wanted changes to it after loud protests from law enforcement groups. And yesterday, a deal was announced between the governor and the bill's author, Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon, meaning SB 54 will likely be voted up or down this week in the state assembly. Joining me now to talk about SB 54 is Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And I believe we also have the author of that bill, State Senator and President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon. Senator DeLeon, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And I suspect you're doing well, too, with this agreement announced yesterday. Tell us, what would it mean to make California a sanctuary state?
You know, I think that during the election last year, November 8th, Californians rejected the politics fueled by resentment, by misogyny, and by bigotry by a margin of 2-1. So we're talking about the values of who we are as a great state. It's very clear that we wouldn't need these types of proposals, policies, were if Hillary Clinton had won the presidency, but it's neither here nor there. We have a president, we have Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and we have, obviously, until just recently, Steve Bannon, and we still have Steve Miller and Chris Kobach, who have a fixation on hardworking individuals who came to this country, who work very hard, who contribute to the American dream, to the prosperity of California, and they have clearly targeted them. I thought, honestly, that the focus would primarily be just on criminal felons who are undocumented immigrants. I don't think there's an argument there across the board that they should be removed. Nonetheless, he has focused on everybody, and there's been over 150% increase on immigrants who have no misdemeanors, not even a traffic violation, an infraction of the detention and deportation of these individuals. So I do believe strongly in family values, and that the federal government should not separate mothers from their children and children from their fathers. So
let me
move forward with this measure.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you what these changes mean, because the governor was on Meet the Press a few weeks ago and said that the bill needed to be changed. He was concerned that it would be too restrictive on what local law enforcement could do to cooperate with federal immigration officials. Tell me, what are the most significant changes that you agreed to yesterday?
Well, some of the changes that we narrowed down the list of crimes would be allowed, the part of the criteria list for communication, local law enforcement, specifically ICE agents. I think we found a nice compromise. They were negotiations during the—I have to give the governor credit that we negotiated before he took off to Russia, when he was in Russia, and when he got back from Russia over the course of the weekend. But we found nice common ground, because the police chiefs now have removed their opposition, and all of the community-based organizations, the community activists, immigrant rights activists, up and down the state of California, from San Francisco down to Los Angeles and points in between, are strongly committed and still support SB 54.
What about the sheriffs? What about the sheriffs? Because they were very vocally opposed.
The sheriffs are different. They're different altogether. Sheriffs are politicians. They're elected. The only difference is that they have a gun in a badge. They have remained staunchly in opposition to the bill. I would assume that they will remain in opposition to the bill. But the two key points here are the following. One, public safety is paramount for all the citizens of California. And number two, we will protect hardworking immigrants who have been here for such a long time, who are law-abiding, tax-paying residents of the state of California. When the dust settles, and if it does pass the Assembly, and the government will sign it if it does pass, this will be the most far-reaching progressive policy of its kind in the nation, even surpassing the Illinois Trust Act, which I give a lot of kudos to them in Illinois. It's a win-win situation for public safety. It's a win-win situation for the community-based organizations who work tirelessly to lobby the legislative body as well as the government. But as for the sheriffs, sheriffs are a different political animal when it comes to law enforcement community. That's why I want to give a lot of kudos to the police chiefs who are very thoughtful, who are very measured, and who are solutions oriented.
And let me ask you, this bill, of course, your version, the original version, with some changes, passed the state Senate. That's the version you would have liked. How concerned are you that these changes water it down beyond what you would have wanted?
Well, Scott, I think it's really important that you don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. Ideally, that would have been the best policy given a Trump administration that's hell-bent and fixated deporting every single individual that walks or talks. We want to be sure that we're not going to be a cog in the Trump deportation machine. But let me go back and underscore. We should never let the perfect get in the way of the good. Relatively speaking, when you compare it to any other policy throughout the country, again, this is the most far-reaching progressive policy of its kind in the nation. I give a lot of kudos to the city and county of San Francisco. They have done a fantastic job with their policies at the local county board of supervisor level. But this will set a mark for many other counties throughout the state, like Kern County, Fresno County, Tulare County, Riverside, and elsewhere. Well, perhaps, it takes a little more lobbying and convincing to do the right thing.
All right. Senator DeLeon, I know this is a busy time, busy week for you, the final week of the session, but let me just ask you, if I can, a couple of other quick questions. Housing.
Sure.
Housing has been a big issue. There are several bills pending that would build more affordable housing, a $3 billion housing bond. There's a tax on real estate transactions that would generate some money.
Well, I would call it a fee.
A fee.
Not a tax. Yeah.
Okay. The courts do make that distinction. But tell me, what's the status of those? Because you've been in discussions, you and the other authors of those bills. What's the status of it? The clock is ticking. If it's going to be voted on by Friday, you've got to have those bills in print.
The clock is ticking on those measures, as well as a Parks bond and my Senate Bill 100% clean energy. Now, I used to live in the Bay Area. I used to live in San Francisco as well as San Jose, so I know the housing stock is exorbitant, or I should say the prices. So we have to really land this deal by Friday. We have two Bay Area senators, Senator Jim Bell, who's the author of the general obligation bond, the $3 billion. We also have Scott Wiener from San Francisco, who's the author of Senate Bill 35. These are two critical pieces that must pass without question by Friday, as well as Senator Tony Atkins from San Diego. We have some great assembly members from San Francisco who have really been on the cutting edge. These measures must pass. We have no other choice. Be very clear. They won't be the panacea to the housing woes up and down the state of California, but they are one giant step forward to make a huge impact on the housing crisis in California. We got to get it done. We have no other choice. People are hurting up and down the state of California, in the Bay Area in particular. I think we have a solid shot to get this done, and we have to get it done by Friday. If we don't get it done by Friday, no legislator should be returning home, because I believe that they should be Democrat or Republican. Should be heavily criticized if we don't get this done. We have no other choice.
Let me just ask you quickly before you go. You're termed out next year.
You can keep me here as long as you want.
Well, let me ask you.
It's your show.
Well, thank you very much. And I know this is a busy time, and I believe Anthony Reyes pulled you out of a meeting, or at least so he told me, and I appreciate that. But there is talk of your future. You have had a very high-profile couple of years up in Sacramento. There's talk that you may run for the U.S. Senate against Dianne Feinstein, or if she retires for that seat, also for governor. There's all kinds of talk out there. For months now, when I've asked you this question, you've been saying, well, I'll let you know when I figure it out. But, it's musical chairs. The music's going to stop pretty soon. When are you going to make a decision?
Yeah, well, my focus has been entirely until Friday to focus on landing these housing deals, park bond, 100% clean energy. Obviously, what we discussed earlier, the California Values Act, Senate Bill 54. That's still my focus, my fixation, my obsession. Until Friday, I believe that if we get these policies across, it helps improve the human condition. So there's been a lot of speculation what my political future will be like or what it should be after I finish in 2018. I would like to continue in public service. I think I'm good at what I do. I put a lot of sweat equity. I roll up my sleeves. I sacrifice a lot. I work really hard. We'll see what happens. You'll know very, very soon. But let me get past this Friday so we can land these major deals that will really help Californians.
All right. State Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon from Los Angeles. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Scott. Thanks a lot. Take care. Okay?
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, bye-bye. And with me here in the studio is Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. What jumps out at you, Marisa, as somebody who's been covering sanctuary cities and states for a long time and SB 54, about what Senator DeLeon just said?
Well, I guess first I would say, I guess we have to ask him follow up Monday with a question, right, about his future.
What he's running for.
You know, I think that this is a compromise, but it reflects a lot of wins for immigration advocates who have been pushing these kinds of bills for years. And I think that's one thing to put this in the context of. If you look back over the time Jerry Brown has been governor, this has been a priority for a lot of these groups, even under Obama, who, let's not forget, was, you know, known by some as the deporter in chief. Immigration was a huge issue under the Democratic president. You know, clearly the rhetoric has changed. Clearly the calculations have changed on all sides since Trump's election. And I don't want to underplay that. But I do think this bill in its current form, which it seems pretty likely to pass by Friday and get signed by Jerry Brown, really builds on two previous pieces of legislation that, again, were very hard fought and that Jerry Brown did veto some versions of. So that was the Trust Act that took effect in 2014 that really set the tone for limiting immigration holds, which is, I think, something we should get into a little bit more explanation of. And then the Truth Act in 2017, which basically required law enforcement in California to tell immigrants their rights before they do go into a situation where they're being interviewed by ICE, especially if they're behind bars already and really, you know, are a captive audience, let's say. So I think for immigration, you know, people on that side of things, there is clearly more they would have liked to see. But I think that they this is going to be a big win for them. And it is going to change the calculation, particularly in counties, as the pro tem mentioned, like Kern or Fresno. You know, in Fresno, they have ICE agents renting space in the jail right now. They have people from Immigration and Customs Enforcement who are there full time. This will
prevent that.
Prevent that.
Yeah. But it does allow some cooperation, particularly if there are inmates who are wanted on or have been convicted of in the past, I think, 15 years, a serious felony.
Yeah. So
which is, I think most would agree, is a good thing.
Yeah. So, and I think that it's interesting because when I was starting to dig into the details of this over the last 12 hours, to back up just a moment, like let's say what the status quo is now, which is that any person in the United States, really, who gets booked into a jail, whose fingerprints are taken by local law enforcement, those fingerprints are already sent to the federal government. And so this was never going to prevent that. What it does do is essentially say, yes, if you were convicted in the past 15 years of these 800 some crimes.
And they've expanded the list.
They expanded the list. It does include some crimes that could be misdemeanors. But, you know, these are mostly what we would think of as more serious or in some cases violent crimes, that law enforcement does have the discretion to notify and potentially in some cases transfer somebody to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. What it doesn't let police do anymore in a lot of counties, and this is not an issue in LA or in San Francisco, but it is an issue in a lot of other counties, they can't hold on to a person, even if they were convicted of one of these previous crimes, past their release date. So if you got arrested for, say, a DUI and you happen to have a burglary in your past, the sheriff in that county could pick up the phone and say, hey, we have this person. But they couldn't say, and we'll hold on to him 3 days after we're supposed to release him or he made bail. And so I think that's really big. And I think that the transfer portion of this is not as significant as this idea really, you know, for folks who have been advocating for it, that it is going to prevent these what they call holds. And I think this puts ICE in an interesting position. they have always said, you know, we should have the right to do this. We enforce immigration law. And what the advocates have said is, fine, go get a warrant. Nobody's going to disagree with a judge that says you have to keep somebody in jail. And so I do think this will force ICE agents in California to prioritize a little bit more.
We did have a case, though, just recently, and this is a little bit of apples and oranges, but up in Sonoma County, where someone who had been accused of domestic violence was about to be released. The Sonoma County informed the federal immigration agencies, I think, he was going to be released in about 45 minutes. They didn't get there in time. The man got out, ended up killing his wife. That's the kind of thing Kate Steinle, another example of an undocumented immigrant who commits a crime, had been deported multiple times. I mean, these issues are very complicated,
yeah.
And they get sometimes oversimplified by the media. But I would imagine that Jerry Brown, in thinking about what kinds of changes he wanted to this legislation, wanted to minimize the chances of the wrong person getting out of jail.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that this bill is going to change what happened in either of those cases significantly. I mean, the Kate Steinle case, I think, has been totally taken out of context.
One-off.
If you look at the facts of that, there was a lot of sort of local politics going on there. The sheriff was very unpopular with the mayor and others, and people were angry at him, even within the sheriff's department. But if you look at San Francisco's policy, that guy would have been released either way. He didn't have any violent felonies. He didn't even have...
Although he had been deported five times.
He had been deported five times, but that is not a violent felony, right? That is illegal reentry, which happens every day. In the Sonoma case, you know, maybe if the sheriff there had seen something in this guy's past, I mean, they did call ICE, right? So this bill wouldn't have let them hold on to him any longer than they already did. I mean, maybe they would have called ICE sooner. Maybe I don't know. It's hard to say. I will say, interestingly, on a sort of another criminal justice debate, that guy got out on bail. And that's been a big issue this year.
That's about a whole other issue that you've also been covering.
Yeah. And that's something that the legislature is going to revisit next year. So I would say in that case, you could as easily point the finger at sanctuary policies as you could at the bail system.
Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. We're talking for just this half hour about SB 54, the so-called sanctuary state bill, which is going to be voted on in the state assembly this week, probably on its way to the governor. And we'd love you to weigh in on any of the things we're talking about this half hour at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments to forum@kqed.org. Marisa, the bill, SB 54, had passed the Senate. There were problems in the Assembly. Can you kind of lay out the political landscape? Who were the Assembly Democrats who were balking at voting for this bill the way it was had been sent over from the Senate?
You know, I think in general, the Assembly does have a more moderate group of Democrats and who tend to be closer with law enforcement. This hadn't been put up for a vote on the floor, so I'm not totally sure exactly, you know, who the challenge was, because we hadn't seen them be forced to take a public position. I do know that, like, you know, someone like Assemblyman Jim Cooper, who's a former law enforcement officer, had worked and tried to help mediate this dispute. I would say a bigger real hurdle was the governor and this idea that, you know, he would veto something if he didn't see some changes. He is close to the sheriffs. They've worked with him on a lot of his criminal justice reforms.
The former attorney general.
Yeah, he is a former attorney general. You know, I think it's interesting. The sheriffs have not come out and, as DeLeon said, made a public comment about this. I would guess, given that they're not going to necessarily support the bill, they might just not oppose it. But, you know, they in this summer, as they sort of ramped up their opposition, made some comments to those of us in the media, sort of saying, you know, we have a system that works right now. They mentioned the Trust Act of 2014 and the Truth Act of 2017. And I thought that was sort of funny because they actually oppose both of those bills. And so I think what you see, and not just in this, but in a lot of the reforms that the California politicians and voters have pushed, is that law enforcement comes along a little more, they're a little more reticent. And they were at the table for this. And I do think that they got a lot of compromises in here that do protect the things they were concerned about.
And we should say not all sheriffs opposed the bill. Vicki Hennessey here in San Francisco, Charlie Beck in Los Angeles, and even former Attorney General Eric Holder came out for a press conference to Los Angeles and said, hey, this is constitutional. This passes muster. So it wasn't across the board. But obviously, L.A. and certainly San Francisco are outliers in the law enforcement world.
Right. And they have some of the oldest sanctuary policies themselves. So really, it's no skin off their nose to oppose this because their local policies and laws already go further in some ways than SB 54 will. I mean, you bring up an interesting point about Holder and the constitutionality. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the Trump administration reacts to the particulars of this bill, because some of the stuff that was amended in does address some of their concerns. And from the beginning, my sense as someone covering this is that a lot of this has been really positioning on both sides. It's less about the details and more about what it, the message it sends. And the message De Leon is clearly still sending is this is California pushing back against Trump. So I could see, even with these amendments, that we'll see pushback from Washington.
It's funny because the Trump administration has targeted these so-called sanctuary cities. I mean, the phrase sanctuary state, I mean, it's just a phrase. It's not a...
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't
legally,
mean anything. No. It's, and so it'll be interesting to see if this now becomes the target of the Trump administration and Attorney General Jeff Sessions, as sanctuary cities have. Let's go to the phones again. The number is 866-733-6786. And we begin in San Jose. Sarah, welcome. Sarah, are you there? Sarah is not there. Marisa, I should also mention that there was some news this morning we didn't get a chance to ask Senator De Leon about, and that is that legislative leaders and the governor have agreed to provide $30 million in assistance to Dreamers. Those are the so-called DACA recipients that came to this country illegally, brought here illegally by their parents when they were little kids. DACA, of course, is a very controversial program in the Trump administration's eyes. But this would provide $30 million in funding for DACA recipients, for community college students, CSU students via the loan program. I mean, another indication of just how far California is going toward, quote, normalizing life for immigrants with or without documentation.
Absolutely. I mean, this is on top of yesterday's lawsuit by our Attorney General, Javier Becerra, challenging the DACA decision by the president to rescind that over the coming months. This follows multiple other pieces of legislation we haven't even talked about. One by San Francisco Assemblyman David Hsu passed just yesterday that would actually prohibit landlords from passing on immigration information to authorities if they suspect someone's undocumented. You know, we have expanded driver's license to immigrants, to undocumented immigrants. We have
in-state tuition.
I mean, it is a litany of these protections from a legal standpoint keep coming, and this money additionally is on top of, I think, another $15 million that was in the state budget to help defend folks who are fighting immigration cases. So,
and I think the Attorney General's office got another $6.5-7 million to staff up to file lawsuits like the one that was filed yesterday.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is not happening in a vacuum. I think what was interesting about this was the real pushback we saw within the state from law enforcement, and the fact that Brown, as a Democrat, was on their side on a lot of this and was really, it would have been, I think, a really bizarre political moment if they had sent this to the governor and he had vetoed it.
And I'm sure he didn't want to do that.
No, probably not.
All right. Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Final week of the legislature. Still a lot to happen.
Yeah, we'll be up late.
You and Guy Marzorati and I will be covering all of that along with the rest of the KQED team. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And we're going to make a pivot at the bottom of the hour. We'll be talking about another state issue, the Board of Equalization, which a new audit shows seems to be run as a family business. We'll hear more about that in a moment. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Stick around.